Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Overstated B-Team podcast on the Overstated NBA Show feed. This is producer Mikey here. And just off the top, before we get into it with Ethan and Adler, I just wanted to say this is something we're going to be trying, I think, like once or twice a week, try to do something a little bit different, kind of a different flavor from what the main feed is giving you. We're going to try to be a little bit more random and probably not so current. Maybe try to make something a little bit more evergreen that you don't have to worry about listening to, like, you know, between the games. We're having a lot of fun with it. We're going to keep trying it. If you've got any feedback for it, please let us know, and let us know what you want to hear too, because we're open to suggestions. I just want to do a quick shout out to my buddy Matt Sullivan, kind of an Overstated veteran. Many of you probably know him, but he's also just a very talented musician, and he loaned out a couple songs for us to help differentiate from the main feed. And yeah, without further ado, here's Matt Sullivan under his title Snowmelt, which will be kicking off all of these B-Team pods. All right, thanks for listening. Let's have some fun.
Hello, 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 everybody, and welcome to the Overstated B-Team Role Player Draft. We're going to do something new today, something a little fun. We got the A-Team, you know, tackling the analytics, the real hard-hitting questions, and we're going to come on the back end here and just kind of have a good time. So I got Brother Ethan with me here. He's going to lay down some rules that we're going to be following, you know, put out a little format, a little bit of structure, and then, we'll get to it. So, Ethan, without further ado, tell the people here what we're going to be doing today.
Adler, first of all, what a great pleasure to see you here tonight. You said come on the back end. That's nice. I really appreciate that we're following up in Steve and Brett's footsteps. Just, you know, really kind of provide some additional content. I'm very excited to be doing this with you on a more consistent basis throughout the summer. And we're going to see how we can keep it rocking throughout the rest of the year here. So we spoke already to what we're going to be doing here tonight, which is going to be a role player draft. Now, the premise of this draft is fairly straightforward. I was inspired by my podcast overlord, Bill Simmons, and he does what he likes to call a wine bottle draft, where we can go back in time, pluck a player from that exact moment in history, and bring him to the present to fight for his basketball life. Now, Adler and I discussed this over the course of the last week, and we wanted to apply this concept to the NBA Finals, where stars are, of course, important and paramount. But we think the role guys don't get enough love. These are the guys that start and do the dirty work, or the players that come off the bench to wreak havoc on the opposing team. That's what we want to focus on here tonight. But we also want to have this have a modern flair and be applicable to this year's finals matchup. So here's what we're going to be doing tonight. Adler and I are going to be alternating picks and going back and forth for six rounds. In the first round, Mikey is going to flip a coin, a very visual performance for a podcast format. We can say whether it's rigged or not, depending on whether I win or lose.
Someone turn the TikTok camera on.
Exactly. TikTok camera is on and ready. That coin flip is going to determine which one of us, myself or Adler, has the priority to select a duo of stars from this year's NBA Finals. These duos are either, of course, Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray for the Denver Nuggets, and on the flip side for the Miami Heat, Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. Mikey fought us tooth and nail for us to put Caleb Martin in there, but I told him no, absolutely not. But hey,
he even offered the number three pick at one point. It was crazy.
I know he's absolutely in his feelings right now. I know he's probably angrily deadlifting off camera just by the thought of us bringing this even up, but you know, he can't do anything. He's too far away from the microphone. He can't cut anything. We're just going to keep it rocking. So Caleb Martin, not going to happen. After that point, for the next five rounds, we're going to draft our role players. Now, of course, our pool here is going to be limited to players who have competed in an NBA Finals in the 21st century. So we can get those people who are like, well, you forgot about such and such in the 1978 NBA Finals. I was not even a twinkle in my parents' eye yet. I want to know what I see in front of my eyes. We're going to look at players who are either number four and lower in both scoring and minutes for their teams in the playoffs. So we're not going to have James Harden in the 2012 on there. No, like third bananas. We're going fourth bananas and lower. We're trying to build the best team with those parameters. And for additionally, we can't have anybody who made an all-star team in the year that they were in the finals. So, for example, Ben Wallace in 2004 would have been a first pick easily for me in this role players draft. But unfortunately, he made the 2004 all-star team, so he is off my ballot completely.
Another thing that I want to throw out real quick, and I'll let you continue. When making my list, I also kept in mind things like, okay, maybe they are the fourth scoring option. Maybe they are not the most, number one admins or anything. Maybe they didn't make an all-star team, but maybe they won the defensive player of the year. If I looked up a player and they got some major award that wasn't the sixth man or something like that, if they got a defense player of the year, something along those lines, I kind of considered that, hey, you're a little bit more than a role player. Now, we can argue the vagueness of that, and there is a couple guys that I'll shout out at the end as kind of honorable mentions that kind of fit that category, but I just wanted to throw that out there real quick. You brought up Ben Wallace. I just thought that was a good little segue.
Absolutely. And the other thing is, additionally, is with the wine bottle draft, we're only selecting players from a specific year. So, for example, I can take 2020 Dwight Howard under these parameters, but I cannot have 2009 Dwight Howard. I could take 06 Shaq. Actually, I couldn't even take 06 Shaq. I'm pretty sure he made the All-Star team that year. So, actually, he's off the table, too. We'll just stick with the Dwight Howard
example. He's also the number two scorer of that Miami team.
Not in the playoffs, but you know how that goes. But anyway, that's how we're going to get this rocking here. So, Mikey, without further ado, I'm going to need you to flip a coin. And either I'm going to need you to call heads or tails. We're going to kick this thing off.
I'm going to call tails. I'm going to get ahead of the game here. I'm going to call tails.
Okay. Mikey is starting out his camera. Coin.
Showing you guys, just for reference, there's a head. There is a tail side.
For reference, this is a quarter from 1985. Denver
great
Mint.
Draft. All right, here we go. And it is tails, which goes to Adler.
I am going. This is, I want to say this is a harder decision than it seems like on paper, but it's not. I'm picking the Denver duo.
Okay. All right. So Adler will start with his squad of Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray. And I am sticking with Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. Now, because Adler won the coin toss, I am going to have first pick of my role players in round number two.
Full discretion, prior to the recording this podcast last night, I sent Ethan my list of candidates. He did not send me his. So if we have some picks go off the rails here, just know that there's a little bit of gamesmanship going on. But continue.
I do appreciate you sending me that list because it did give me at least a framework to kind of work off of. There are a couple guys who I'd liked on off your list, but I'm going to try and stray away from as much as humanly possible, just to kind of have some parity. But I might snag a couple Warriors guys. I know they're going to be high on your board, and there's a lot of guys from a lot of finals teams that you could choose. But
my whole list is Warriors players, so you're fine. You're fine. It's just Leandro Barbosa over and over again.
Sean Livingston, just the whole gamut. I saw Anderson Varejao on there, and I was like, "But
Ian Clark made an appearance."
Oh God! All right, but with my first pick, I'm going to go big ball, just because I want to. Obviously, Nikola Jokic is an offensive hub, as Brett and Steve said on their podcast, probably the best offensive hub that we've seen in the NBA. I think there's a potential for a t-shirt idea there with an offensive hub with a certain font and lettering that might appeal to some people with a nice picture of Nikola Jokic. I might see if I can throw something together there. I think it looked pretty funny. But I got to slow this man down. Now, obviously, I have Bam Adebayo, but I'm going to try to steer into the skid a little bit. I need some extra defense, and I need some extra rim protection. I'm working on switchability to contend with those big wings, maybe find somebody to lock down Aaron Gordon in the dunker spot. So with my first pick from the 2011 Dallas Mavericks, I will be selecting with my first pick Tyson Chandler.
Oh!
So Tyson Chandler in 2011. It's hard to look at a team in the NBA Finals when you're talking about role guys and not think about that 2011 Mavericks squad. Basically, they're in a very similar situation where the Heat were right now. You're going up against an offensive force with LeBron, Wade, and Bosch in their first iteration, their first finals together. And this team of motley individuals, whether it's Sean Marion, JJ Barea, Jason Kidd, all these different, Peja Stojakovic, all these different players either at the tail end of their careers or kind of just starting to enter their prime. It was Dirk and a bunch of dudes. And the big reason that they're able to win that series is they were able to keep guys out of the paint. and able to protect the rim a lot more, which is why I'm taking Tyson Chandler. Adler, what are your thoughts about my first
pick? I'm shocked right now. I thought I knew who you were going to pick number one. It wasn't Tyson Chandler. When you mentioned 2011 Mavs, I sat there last night and I debated between Sean Merriam and Tyson Chandler. Which one do I put down here as a possibility? I ultimately chose Sean Merriam, mostly because I was tired and I wanted to get the fuck over with. But I looked at Tyson Chandler very hard. I understand where you're coming from that. Do I understand why you went number one with that? No, but hey, to each their own, and I see you.
Well, the big thing was, is like, obviously, I saw your list and I saw that you had Marion there. I knew that there was going to be somebody from that team that got selected. Obviously, you could give Marion his roses. I wanted to get a little cute and maybe go a little JJ Barea in the fourth round, but I don't think I'm quite there yet. But when I basically came down to this, if I ended up with Jokic, my center position's taken care of. But with this Heat roster, I need switchability and I need defense in order to jump passing lanes and lock stuff down. So that's why I went Chandler number one. I think he's a phenomenal option in terms of how he did in that finals appearance. It's what got him that big contract in New York. It really kind of solidified him as like a big defensive presence that you'd want on your NBA roster, even in today's game.
I hear you on that. And all due respect. So with that, I mean, unless there's anything more you want to touch on more, I think we're going to get to my first pick here.
Go for it, man.
I can't believe you didn't take him. I think you know who I'm going with here. I thought we discussed this last night, but apparently things got thrown off a little bit. I'm going with 2015 Andre Iguodala, former Nugget, former Finals MVP. I want a guy who, if Jokic is going to have one flaw, and I'm not even saying it's that big of a flaw, but if he's going to have one flaw, it's defense. Give me a wing who is switchable, who is high IQ. I mean, between Jokic and Iggy, can you give me a higher IQ, you know, duo on the floor at the same time? And that's not even including Jamal Murray in that. I mean, we're going to get every pass. We're going to be able to defend the wings. I mean, he's a goddamn NBA Finals MVP. So pulled some stats here and I separated them, you know, each candidate, what'd you do in the regular season? What'd you do in the playoffs? What'd you do in the finals? And the main thing that I'm looking for is I'm looking for a guy who stepped it up each and every step of the way. There was a lot of candidates who made a finals who had really good regular seasons, but kind of teetered in the finals. I'm looking at you, 2010 Lamar Odom. Andre Iguodala, though, you know, you look in the regular season, in the playoffs, he's right around 10 points, right around 4.5 assists, 3.5 rebounds, right around a steal per game. You know, kind of just in that range. I'm not saying it's bad, but it's not spectacular. You put him in the finals, Iggy finals, 16 points per game, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, 1.5 steals per game, shooting 52-40 on the splits. We're not going to talk about his free throw percentage. And, 7-1 assist to turnover ratio in the NBA Finals while guarding LeBron the entire time. Give me Andre Iguodala.
Obviously, this was going to be the number one pick I knew for you right out of the gate just because of your blatant homerism. But ultimately, other than that, this is just a phenomenal pick. You know, like Andre Iguodala has really solidified himself in the culture of that team, especially after that finals performance. Like you said, locking down LeBron is something that he needed to work on. And remind me again, like when you were in that first iteration against those LeBron Cavs, like how did Iggy come around when you were watching that finals kind of turn around? How did he kind of solidify himself either as a guy who came off the bench throughout the playoffs or as a guy who eventually is like, I'm gonna be the LeBron stopper for game after game?
It was set up the whole year. It started in the very beginning of the year when he agreed to come off the bench so Harrison Barnes could fit into that starting four and be kind of that stretch four that we needed there, even though he played the three a lot as well. But it just really set the tone. There was no like, oh, man, we didn't know Iggy to do this. Oh, wow, I can't believe he just flipped. I mean, it was there the whole time. And it was just a matter of when is the stage going to get big enough where he is needed to do what he needs to do. I'm not going to say, I mean, the big shock was that he won the MVP. Everyone sitting there was thinking Steph Curry. That really was the shock. No one was surprised, at least in terms of Warriors fans, in terms of what he could do defensively, what he did, even though LeBron still put up 40 points per game or something like that. He made him work hard. It wasn't a shock. It wasn't some, hey, where did this come from? I mean, it was set the tone early in the year. He sacrificed his minutes, his role for the betterment of the team, and he came through when he needed to come through, which is It's what he does. That's what a vet does. That's what a former All-Star does. And that's what a glue guy does.
Absolutely.
Ultimate role player.
Since we brought up Andre Iguodala, like where do you think his career ultimately goes? Like obviously throughout this entire season, he's been affected by injuries and he's kind of been reserved like a sort of a, like not necessarily a coaching role, but definitely a mentor role on the team. Do you think he's kind of heading for that career trajectory of like Udonis Haslem where he's going to be with the Warriors until the wheels fall off? Or
no, I don't believe that at all. I don't. I think he was willing to give 1 year of that. I think he's a phenomenal mentor, especially to Jonathan Kuminga. I mean, they apparently have a very close relationship. He's very close with Moses Moody as well. If you haven't heard the Moses Moody feature on the Point Forward podcast, it was an awesome conversation. You could tell how much Iggy respects a young guy like that and vice versa. Iggy's a businessman. He is a venture capitalist. He is a real smart guy. And as soon as he retires, I have no doubt that he's going to be around the team a lot. I have no doubt he's going to maintain those relationships with those young guys and continue to mentor in the way that he knows best. But that is a man who wants to do what he wants to do. And I don't believe coaching or assistant coaching or anything like that is a part of the plan. I think he's got much bigger goals. You know what I could see him do? Total hot take. I didn't read anything about this. He might join LeBron in the purchase of the Las Vegas expansion team. Okay. I would not be surprised if that happened along with Draymond Green. So just keep an eye out for that.
Okay. Definitely a mogul move to keep our eyes on. All right. So I took Tyson Chandler. Adler went Andre Iguodala. I'm looking at my roster right now, and I'm lacking something that I think is going to be paramount to my success in terms of a role player. Somebody who can go shot for shot with Jamal Murray. Somebody who I think when he burst onto the scene and earned the big contract that he did kind of came as a bit of a shock. And of course, Adler might have some choice words to say about this man, given that it happened in the 2019 finals. But with my second pick, I will be choosing 2019 Fred Van Vliet as my starting point guard on this team. Adler, another big reaction from you. I'm going away from your board, man. I'm staying away from all your dudes.
You really are. And a part of that Gasper was he broke my heart in 2019, especially after playing so poorly in the Eastern Conference Finals leading up to it. I did not think that he would be an X factor. Having said that, I would like to hear your argument with this because last night, again, while looking, I was looking at that 2019 Raptors team and three guys stood out to me the most. Marc Gasol, Serge Ibaka, Fred VanVleet. My initial choice was Fred. However, looking back at the box score, in terms of just his stats, he didn't damage us as much as I felt like he did in the moment. Because of that, I omitted him off my list. But I see where you're going with that. And I mean, he really did step it up in the finals, especially with his three-point percentage. I think the last three games of the 2019 finals, he shot over 40% from three each game. And that was a big deciding factor. Ultimately, I didn't put him on my list, but I'd love to hear your argument with it.
Yeah, and I mean, like, at this point, I'm kind of just drafting for fit because I don't have the luxury to carry Nikola Jokic on my team, so I'm trying to worry about the most cohesive team and how I can kind of work in terms of a distribution factor and also to kind of get some shooting out there. So, and like you said, like, his stats didn't blow you away, arguably, for at least the first couple of games of that series, but you really started to see him turn it on, especially when it kind of came down to the nitty-gritty in Game 5 and Game 6. The biggest thing for me is the three-point shooting. Something that I think my team desperately needs. Obviously, we keep waiting for the Heat to stop shooting the way that they've been shooting. And in this role player draft, I'm trying to plan for that and grab a guy who averaged 40% for the entire series from downtown. Put him in a starting role, maybe kind of see what happens between him and Jamal Murray. Maybe they start to go shot for shot like he did with Donovan Mitchell in the bubble. I'm hoping for the best from a guy like Fred VanVleet. And I'm honestly interested to see how his career moves going forward nowadays. Obviously, his tenure with the Raptors is kind of coming to an end. It's going to be interesting to see where he goes in free agency, obviously in a league that's heavily saturated at the point guard position. You and I have both discussed where we think D'Angelo Russell's going to land. I'd put Fred kind of in that same class of an offensive guard who's potentially a bit of a defensive liability. Like, but at least in terms of this exercise, I know that I have the defense on the back end to kind of offset what I would get with Fred when I'm looking at Bam, Jimmy, and Tyson Chandler.
A lot of back end talk today, which is real exciting for us. But one thing that I really like is Fred is almost like you can't be a smaller Kyle Lowry, but he's almost a mini Kyle Lowry. And, you know, they played together in Toronto on that 2019 team. Lowry goes to the Heat. Obviously, him and Jimmy work out well together. You know, say what you want about Lowry's stats this year, but I think in terms of personality-wise and play-wise, I think that's a very compatible duo. So I see where you're going with that, and I think that's a good team fit. All right, so my next team, my next pick here. Again, you know, you've got a facilitator in Iggy, you've got a facilitator in Nikolai, you've got a go-to scorer in Jamal, and a go-to scorer in Nikolai as well. But you need someone to pass to. You need someone to space the floor. You need an outlet. You need someone who is going to relieve some pressure from the middle of the court. And I cannot think of a better candidate for that than the 2013 Miami Heat Ray Allen. So I am going 2013 Ray Allen with my second pick as my starting shooting guard. I think Jamal gives you some flexibility because he's 6'5". He's got some size to him. I went to a Denver game during December of this year, and he is deceivingly large on the court. Jamal is a deceivingly large man. So you can afford to have a little bit of a defensive liability at the two there. And I mean, goddamn, are we talking about one of the greatest shots of all time, game six of the finals that year over San Antonio? I don't know of a better shot than that. Maybe Derek Fisher, 0.4 seconds. Maybe that dude from Phoenix in 1979 who hit the half court shot in, you know, when they went to like seven overtimes. I'm just saying, you give me Ray Allen to pass out to in the corner with Iggy, Jamal, and Nikolai passing. I think that's a match made in heaven. So I'm going to go Ray Allen here. Final stats, 10.5 points per game, 2 rebounds, about 1.5 assists. Not going to blow you away with his stat line from that finals. His best game was game 5, 21 points, 4 rebounds, 4 from 4 from 3, 7 of 10 from the field overall. But again, I mean, you were just talking about the biggest shot in NBA finals history. And I've got that guy on my team. I'm taking it all day.
So let's talk about 38-year-old Ray Allen running around and getting his cardio in with your guys. I think it's a good pick. Obviously with his role on that Heat team, and obviously with the shot you just spoke of, he cemented his place in history. But I mean, if you look at his game 6 stat line, man was just running around for 41 minutes. He ended the game with 9 points. You would have ended the game with 6 if he hadn't made that shot. So I see the argument for Ray Allen. I think he would have been later available. He wasn't really on my board as a whole. But if you're looking for just like a culture guy, obviously we've seen what happens with Nikola Jokic and spot up shooters. If you can get the ball, you're going to shoot it and you might score a fair amount of the time. You look at guys like KCP or Christian Brown or Bruce Brown throughout these NBA playoffs. And obviously the catch and shoot game is wide open, at least in terms of how you want to run that offense. I just think there are better options for a spot up shooter than a 38-year-old Ray Allen, but that's just my
opinion. I'll take a 45-year-old Ray Allen. Have you seen the phenomenal shape that man stays in? Good Lord. He's still running marathons on a weekly basis. I'm not drafting for the next 10 years. I'm drafting for one series. Give me a vet who's a Hall of Famer, who's been there before, who's hit those shots. I there are very few people on this planet that I trust less to hit a three than Ray Allen.
All right. But so just to clarify for logistical purposes, are you starting Ray Allen on this hypothetical super team you're creating?
Absolutely.
Or is he you're starting him? Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
That dude's got cardio for days. He's not going to get run off the court. He's going to provide spacing the entire game, which even if he doesn't make a lot of shots, that spacing is valuable. I believe in that spacing. So I'm going Ray Allen number 2.
Okay. All right, well, this is very eye-opening for me, I think, in terms of how I thought this draft was going to go. Already, you and I have gone completely separate directions, which I think is fantastic. but I'm excited to see what people say after we're done with this draft, just because this is already going way better than I thought it was going to. This is a lot of fun. Let's do this again. All right, moving on. Number 3 pick for my team. Again, I'm still drafting for starters. Apparently, you are too. You're grabbing guys out of the old folks' home. That's totally fine with me.
That means you're going to have Tyson Chandler and Bam Adebayo starting next to each other. You know that, right?
Correct.
Okay.
And you know, right. I'm thinking maybe a little platoon swap sort of deal, you know, maybe kind of use them to spell each other's minutes. Because honestly, if we're looking at that Miami team, the one thing that they really need is a backup big man. Like Cody Zeller ain't it. I'm really excited to see how that goes when Bam's off the floor in these finals. But again, for this hypothetical exercise, I'm going for height.
Okay.
Speaking of going for height, I am going to steal my first guy off of your list. I need somebody to fill my small forward spot. I'm going for length. I'm going for girth. I'm going for people in close proximity to the Kardashian family. And my next pick is going to be 2009 Lamar Odom.
Talk about
guys who, if you could redo their career over 10 times, 50 times, 100 times, Lamar Odom had the potential to be that guy when he was picked out of Rhode Island. Obviously, you look at his acumen and kind of how he bounced around the league, obviously starting off on a Clipper squad that wasn't necessarily like the best fit in terms of culture for anybody with a pulse. But then kind of seeing what he was able to do when he got out of that framework and got into like the Lakers system. I liked how he was able to kind of space the floor and act as kind of like a primary or even secondary ball handler. Obviously, nobody's a secondary ball handler when Kobe Bryant's on your team, but when he was available in short spurts, he was able to really space the floor for them, provide really good defense, and I think he's going to be an awesome match. I have an amazing defensive team at this point between the guys I've picked, with the exception of Fred VanVleet, who I just need to chuck up shots. I'm looking for extreme switchability. I'm looking for extra hands. I'm looking for guys to jump passing lanes. And I think Lamar is going to do an awesome, awesome job at doing that.
So you've got Lamar at the three at this point then.
Correct. I'm sliding Jimmy down to the two, just because it makes it a little bit easier in terms of just kind of the matchups that I'm already kind of seeing to create here. Which means Jimmy's going to be locking up geriatric Ray Allen. I'm very excited to watch that exchange go down. There's going to be a lot.
So, Ethan, you have your starting five right now, right? Can you list it from one through five?
Correct. At the five, Tyson Chandler. At the four, Bam Adebayo. At the three, Lamar Odom. At the two, Jimmy Butler. And at the one, Fred VanVleet.
Adler, that is the worst shooting five I've ever heard in my life. What the hell is happening? You got to draft. So what are you going to draft for sixth man to play backup to Festus Ezeli? What is happening here?
Look,
this draft is fucking off the rails.
Look, my favorite team is the 2004 Detroit Pistons. Three-point shooting doesn't exist to me. I'm just looking for rock fights every game, and I think I have the perfect team to just go out there and muck it up. I'm very excited.
I just love that you really want switchability and defensive like versatility, and then you pick Fred VanVleet and Lamar Odom and Tyson Chandler. We'll talk about it at the end. We'll talk about the end. One thing I do want to bring up with Lamar, though, that is extremely impressive, and if I hadn't had the Denver duo, just like how you would have gone Iggy if you started out with the Denver duo, if I had the Miami Heat, I would have picked Lamar with one of my first two picks. His finals in 2009 is one that should be put in the books for a long time. He had a good regular season, about 11 points a game, 8 rebounds, 2.5 assists. Shooting splits were actually pretty decent. He shot almost 50% from two. He's about 32% from three. I'm sure not shooting a lot. Averaged about 30 minutes a game. Came off the bench in about half of those games, so definitely fits the criteria here. In the finals, though, this man stepped it up. 13.5 points a game, 8 rebounds, 1 steal, 1 assist, 1 block. Shooting splits, here's where it gets great. 54 from the field, 50 from 3, 70 from the free throw line. That man stepped it up when it counted the most. Not the next year, but in 2009 he did. All right. Any more Lamar thoughts, or are we on to my pick here?
I'm just very excited for you to select old ass Gary Payton from either 2004 or 2006 with your next pick. We need to raise the median age of your team there, buddy. What do you got next?
Well, not to disappoint you, but I will not be picking old ass Gary Payton with this pick. Though I will say, going back, Gary Payton in 2004 had a very good playoff and finals run. Very underrated run. Shout out Karl Malone for losing that series for them. I want some defensive versatility. I want some switchability. I want some height on my team. I don't want a lot of girth, though. So with my next pick, I am going with 2021 Phoenix Sun Mikal Bridges. I'm getting another wing defender to pair with Iggy. I'm sorry, throw me two wings against Iggy and Mikal all day long, and you're going to get locked up. He can hit the three, and I don't even know if we're going to count what Mikal is doing now on the Nets, which is a little hard because there's a little bit of a recency bias with all that, but I am doing my best just to consider what he was as a Phoenix Sun, which was the ultimate role player, the ultimate Swiss Army knife. You look at his finals run, 12 points, 4 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal, half a block. Shooting splits were great, 53, 42, 91. And he carried that through the regular season and the playoffs. His shooting splits were just off the charts every round, every regular season. Game 2 was his best game, 27 points, 7 rebounds, an assist, a block, a steal. game three or game five, he had a really good game as well. But I am just looking for a guy who, again, is going to move the ball, play the right way, play unselfishly, hit open threes, and lock down the opposing wing. And I think I just got that in Mikal.
Mikal's a good pick. And obviously, when you look at that finals and it's so fresh in everybody's minds, those first two games with the Suns, when Mikal was on, Mikal was on. Like you said, game two, his best game, got to the line eight times, took 15 shots, was his high in that series. When he was able to get open and able to knock down shots, especially really early in his development and kind of coming into his role in the finals, when everyone's cluing on either Booker or Paul or DeAndre Ayton in the middle, having that leak out and that ability to knock down shots was crucial for that team, especially over the next first two games. But then over the last four, he fell off a little bit. I mean, he took four shots apiece in games three and four, six shots in game five, and seven in game six. And ultimately, you could chalk that up to game script or how Budenholzer and the Bucks were kind of able to adjust their game plan to kind of lock down those open shots that they were getting. But again, at the end of the day, like, Mikal's a really, really good pick. And especially with what he's doing right now in Brooklyn, whether he's going to be a trade piece or kind of the centerpiece for their team for the future, I'm very excited for how his career is kind of projecting over the next few years.
Yeah. And you know, I am trying to base my picks off how they did perform in the finals. So I'm not going to stay here and be like, well, it could have been this and it could have been that. In all fairness, though, I think a Mikal Bridges, even the same version of him, performs a lot better when you've got Iggy, Ray Allen, Jamal Murray, and Nikolai surrounding him versus a Suns team that, even with Chris Paul, was very inexperienced in that position that we're in, and I think just kind of imploded a little bit. Granted, though, I can't say that for sure, so I have to take what happened as what happened, but that is what I'm going to put my faith into, is that in a different system, different environment, there's just going to be a little bit less of that drop-off. Absolutely. And also, I mean, Mikey, you want to talk about Ethan having the worst shooting team of all time. Point guard Jamal, shooting guard Ray Allen. I've got my three guard as Mikal. I've got Iggy as my small ball four, and I've got Nikolai as the five. I think that's a really well spaced lineup.
All right. I need myself a sixth man. I need myself a guy who I would not describe as afraid at any context. I need myself a man who at his peak was a freak athlete, was a knockdown shooter, a highlight reel dunker, and at his lowest point had arguably the second best player in NBA history look at him like he was the dumbest motherfucker alive. So with my fourth pick in the role player draft, I will be selecting 2016 J.R. Smith.
Love it.
J.R. Smith. I loved J.R. Smith when he came into the league. I was a really big Nuggets guy, especially in that era. I went on my Carmelo tirade in the last episode. You can go back and listen to it. When J.R. Smith showed up on that team, I think he gave them a little something that they didn't have, which was a highlight reel factor. When you looked at the rest of that team, whether on that Nugget squad, whether it was Marcus Camby or Nene, or whenever Chauncey Billups decided to show up or anything like that, you know, like, they didn't have like a guy who could jump out of the gym and provide those highlight reel plays. And I think J.R. Smith is going to be that guy. This is a guy who is supremely confident in himself. And plus, he's a good golf guy. So, you know, when I'm traveling down to Miami for game three, I've got a couple extra days off. I can go ahead and hit the course with my guy and see how things kind of shake out. He'll probably kick my ass because I don't have golf clubs that fit me, and I never have, and I probably never will, just kind of based on my trajectory. But at the end of the day, man, I'm excited to welcome J.R. Smith to the team.
I love that pick. I love J.R. I think he fits the roster that you've built very well. So I think the fit is there, especially as the sixth man. And you need a guy like that in the finals that has the confidence and the audacity to shoot some of the shots that J.R. Smith is willing to shoot. Even if he doesn't make them, just the fact that it's there changes the structure of the offense and changes the flow of the offense and just how the defense approaches you. So you need a guy who's willing to do the things JR is willing to do. You need a guy who can get a rebound off a free throw, take it all the way back out to the three-point line and regroup and figure out what's going on. So I think that's a great pick.
Exactly. And if you look at his stats from the finals, just over 10 points a game. But what I'm looking for ultimately is the 3-point shots. Like, you guys are shit all over me for not having enough shooting. This is my shooting that I can bring off the bench when I need to spell a guy like Jimmy, or if Fred's having an off day, I can go ahead and I can feel pretty confident bringing JR in to just absolutely chuck. And that's what I think my team needs.
With the roster you made, JR is going to have the confidence to shoot 19 threes a game. And I'm so here for it.
And hey, you know, if he ends up shooting like darn near 40% like he did in 2016, shoot 33s, man. JR, go to town. I just want you to feel confident in yourself in that mile high air that you're already accustomed to. I'm playing to the elements, man. I need guys who are familiar with the territory. You did the same thing when you took Iggy. I don't know if you did it consciously or subconsciously, but man, I need to be able to play in that altitude. And that's what I want to see.
I love it. I love it. That's a great pick. I am not upset at that in any way, shape, or form. So I too need a six man. However, I am not going to take a typical six man here. You've got some size up front now with your first pick being Tyson Chandler. Now, while I love Jokic and he is still the biggest guy on the court, defense isn't his number one thing. And you've got two guys. You've got Bam and Tyson that need to be accounted for. So I'm going to go with my fourth overall pick, my sixth player on my team. We're going to go back to the 2019 Raptors, which pains me so much because
you're taking Mark, aren't you?
I am taking Mark Gasol.
Okay.
Hell of a career, hell of a player. Normally not a role guy either. But on that Raptors team, definitely not the first, second, or third scoring option. Held it down defensively, stretched the floor. He had three awesome games in the finals. Game one, three, and five. Game one, 20.7 rebounds, an assist, two blocks, a steal. Game three, 17.7 rebounds, four assists. In the finals, his shooting splits, 46, 38, 87. In the regular season, the shooting splits, 47, 44, 77. The man was a baller. He's massive. He's a former defensive player of the year. He knows how to play the right way. And again, just like we're talking about, you want a guy who has the personality type that's going to show up when you need to show up. And that's Marc Gasol. I think he's the perfect backup for Nikolai because he maintains size, he maintains defensive ability, and he still stretches the floor. While he may not be the passer that Nikolai is, he is still a damn good passer with a high IQ as well. So I don't think I'm losing very much in that department when Nikolai sits. So I am thrilled to have Mark. I thought you were going to take him when you picked the Fred VanVleet pick. And I'm gonna stick right there.
You know, when that trade came through at the deadline in 2019, I remember seeing that come across my Twitter, and I was like, God damn, that is a phenomenal, phenomenal move for the Toronto Raptors when they may have that trade go through. Obviously, that was the season that Mark was trying to get out of Memphis for whatever reason. They were in that transition phase between the grit and grind era and the era that we see ourselves in right now. And Mark wanted to go off and have a chance to win a championship. And when you look at what they ended up giving up in that trade, when you're the Raptors, you bring in Marc Gasol for DeLon Wright, CJ Miles, shout out CJ's PJs, Jonas Valanciunas, and a 2024 second round pick that still obviously we don't know who that man is yet. But when you take a good hard look at what that trade is, that was the phenomenal move that they did. Obviously, the other guys that they had, Chris Boucher is still too young. Pascal Siakam, not exactly a rim defender. They had Greg Monroe on the team for a little bit that year. But you bring in a guy who's like a Swiss Army knife and he can have that defensive anchor ability. I think that's a big reason why they made the run that they did. And when they ran into the Warriors, and obviously we could talk about injuries aside, especially in games when Klay went down, that was a devastating injury. And I can speak from experience that I was in a bar wearing a Jose Calderon jersey here in Minneapolis, and I had to tell a Warriors fan to shut the fuck up and sit down, because I hate it when people cheer for injuries, and I was not in a lucid state of mind when this took place. But at the end of it, exactly, like, you got to stand up for guys when they go down and they get hurt. But man, Mark's a great pick. Obviously, I went for size early. I realize now that maybe Mark was still available. I feel still pretty confident with my guys, but yeah, that's phenomenal pick. Awesome pick.
All right. Ethan, let's hear it. Last pick Ethan, you're after.
Ethan, you can use a little shooting. I just want to throw it out there that Joel Anthony is still available.
Okay.
Yeah, you've got someone like that.
Blazers legend?
No. Miami Heat center in 2012. Yeah.
Oh, I was also thinking Joel Prisbilla, my bad.
The vanilla gorilla, Joel Prisbilla. No, not him. There's also throwing it out there off of the Mavs. I know you already got one, but Brendan Haywood still available. You've got shooters out there. You got someone to pick from.
Let's not forget 2021 Chris Middleton is still on the board as one of the main role players that you can take here. Drew Holiday was clearly the leader of that team. So shout out Steve, and I just wanted to throw that out there for you real quick.
Man, this draft is already going off the rails. I do want to clarify a couple of things. First of all, Mikey, you know I'm a Chris Anderson guy, so if I'm drafting anybody off those Heat squads and I need a little shooting, you know I'm going with the Birdman. And honestly, I don't know where to go here. I've got a decision to make. I've got my chucking guards. I've got my big boys. I feel like I need one more switchable piece to kind of see how this is going to shake out. I'm gonna do a bit of a swerve, and I'm gonna go based off a body of work that I don't entirely know what it is yet. I see that Adler's leaning back. Adler, you might want to lean forward. I don't want you to fall out of your chair right now, because with my last pick, I'm gonna take 2023 Bruce Brown with my last pick.
2023 Bruce Brown. Full clarity, I did not realize we were taking the actual role players in this year's NBA Finals, or else Caleb Martin would have been my number one pick. I know you excluded him from the beginning. That's why I thought maybe we're not doing modern players right now. But I will allow it. I will take it. He is, a brand new father. You know, shout out Lana Rhodes. And that man deserves a spot on your roster, just like she deserved a spot on his.
Mike, you started to interject there. Am I completely out of bounds for taking somebody that I have no idea what his body of work is yet?
I'm sorry. I'm a little busy Googling Lana Rhodes. And we might have to get off the
podcast. What are we doing? Okay. But no.
It turns out she has a lot of stepbrothers.
Oh, Jesus Christ. This is the second week in a row that Mikey has come in with something aggressively cancelable on the podcast. Mikey, Bulgarian squats or whatever the fuck it is you're doing right now.
Give me a quick little argument for Bruce Brown.
You know, I like him. If I'm taking a guy who I think belongs in a Heat jersey, I honestly think he's playing for the wrong team in these finals just based on what he does and how he does it. Obviously, I'm looking for gritty defensive guys. I'm looking for switchability. I'm looking for junkyard dogs to go in there, punch some people in the face, grab some rebounds, and just get out and go. Like, honestly, I was looking for an enforcer. Part of me wanted to kind of look towards like the PJ Tuckers of the world when we were looking for somebody to kind of come in and make a statement. Bobby Portis was in play. I'm looking for a guy like that to come off the bench and motherfuck some guys. And I think that Bruce Brown, I'm hopefully this is going to be an eat my word scenario in a week or two here if he goes out and lays a complete egg in these finals. But I think he's going to be a really integral part of what the Nuggets try to do, especially if we run into a situation on a night where Michael Porter Jr. doesn't have it or KCP's not hitting his shots. They're going to really need to rely on Bruce Brown to be the first guy off the bench for those slow shooting nights for foul trouble. And I think he's a good addition to my team. And I think he kind of fits the vibe too, just in terms of the guys that I've picked.
Okay. I hear you on that. I wouldn't have picked him, but I hear you. And now your team is complete.
It is nice to be heard.
Do you want to give a quick recap of your team?
Absolutely. From top to bottom, I'm starting out with Jimmy and Bam. Then my five guys after that, I will be taking 2011 Tyson Chandler, 2019 Fred VanVleet, 2009 Lamar Odom, 2016 J.R. Smith, and then for a little nightcap, a little 2023 Bruce Brown in tow. Adler, okay. Put a bow on yours. Right. What do you got?
This is my last pick. This one's tough. I'm debating between three different guys. I'm not going to sit here and give the argument for, you know, all three of them. But long story short, I think normally in this position, I'm looking for a secondary ball handler, someone to come off the bench, facilitate the ball, a nice little back end story, a little comeback story, something like that. But because Jamal, Iggy, and Jokic can all handle the rock, I'm going to switch it up a little bit, and I'm going to take the risk that those three guys can handle the facilitating responsibilities here. And with my last pick, shout out Molly Hunter, I'm going to go 2004 Tayshaun Prince.
Okay.
Adding another versatile, long, defensive wing who's got dog in him, who's made the clutch plays in the biggest moments. Not the girthiest, but that's okay with me because in today's NBA, physicality, it's not there as prevalent as it used to be. We don't have to be girthy anymore, you know? Skinny boys are up. And
so you're saying on the back end, you're not looking for girth.
I'm not looking for girth on the back end. I think in today's modern day and age, you can have less girth and it's more about just what you do with it and more just how versatile, you know, the length is. And I think and that's what causes.
And you're looking for endurance too, obviously. When you look at a guy like Tayshaun Prince, you look for a guy that can stay on the court.
I'm looking for endurance and a stepsister at the same exact time. With Tayshaun.
It's funny because this coincides perfectly with all this Lana Rhodes research I'm doing.
I just can't believe the coincidence behind that. That's crazy. I didn't even know who this person was. One thing that I do just really, what I really, really like about the Tayshaun pick is between Tayshaun and Ray Allen, I've got two of probably the most iconic plays in playoff history. Tayshaun's did not happen in the finals, but it happened in the game to get to the finals. And that block on Reggie Miller in the Eastern Conference Finals with, I think, less than a minute left. I think it was either tied, they were down by two. It was a two-point difference. Reggie Miller, there's a steal. Reggie breaks out. There looks like there is no one around him. And Tayshaun comes out of nowhere and says, LeBron's going to make this look a lot cooler in about 12 years, but I'm going to be the first one to do it. Blocks the shit out of Reggie Miller. Tayshaun can step out, hit a three. He can space the floor. He can guard the number one wing guy on the opposite team. And now I've got three guys who can all take the primary ball handler and really lock them down. So I don't think the fact, because normally Jimmy's advantage is he's 6'8 and can handle the rock and he's strong as shit. And I think between those three guys, I think I've got that covered at this point. And my hope is that Jamal, Iggy, and Nikolai can handle the facilitating and the playmaking duties enough where I don't need a secondary ball handler off the bench. So I am opting for a wing position and I'm going Tayshaun. And that concludes it. So Ethan just read his, my team. I've got point guard Jamal Murray. I've got shooting guard 2013 Ray Allen. I've got small forward. I've got 2021 Mikal Bridges. At the four, I'm going to put 2015 Iggy. I'm going to put Nikolai as my center. And then my two guys off the bench are 2019 Marc Gasol and 2004 Tayshaun Prince.
All right, so Mikey has turned his camera back on. Obviously, done with his independent research he's been doing while
Adler and I've been doing it right now. I can tell.
Oh, God, just straight shirt dicking it right now. This is great, Mikey. Who did we miss, man? Obviously, you've got a lot of problems with me. Who do you got?
I have a couple honorable mentions that if I would love to get to at a certain point after Mikey's.
I do want to say because you were concerned about post defense. And leaving J.J. Barea there after that post defense he played on LeBron in 2011, it's just all time. Like, if you don't think he could lock down Nikola Jokic after locking down LeBron, you got another thing coming. So, if there's any real misses there, it's got to be that one. I do want to hear, before I make my choice, let's hear some of your honorable mentions. How about you guys each hit me with three?
Yeah, let me hit you with three. Number one, 2011 and 2016 LeBron James are on there. In reality, one guy that I really wanted to highlight was 2001. God, I hate this guy. I really do hate this guy. Like, as a kid, I legitimately had disdain for this man. But you cannot deny his impact. And that's 2001 Rick Fox on the Los Angeles Lakers. He was their dog. He was their glue guy. I think Kobe and Shaq, obviously, while the most talented duo maybe ever, they had some legit interpersonal problems with each other. And I think you needed a guy like Rick Fox to sit there and go, I'll do all the dirty work. So shout out Rick Fox, 2001. Shout out 2008 Rajon Rondo. I wanted to throw this out there because most people would consider him a star of that Celtics team. But in 2008, he was the fourth guy. He was not a part of that big three. They did not recognize him as part of that big three. He started kind of coming into that main role starting in that 2009, 2010 range. So 2008 was my cutoff for him being a role player, and he was a phenomenal finals player that year. I had almost a 6-1 turnover ratio, assist to turnover ratio. And in game six, to close it out, 21 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists, 6 steals, and then at the time, a record 16 assists in game two. So shout out 2008. Rajon Rondo. And then I'm going to get some flack for this, and I understand this person does not technically qualify because they were an all-star starter that the year that I'm going to reference, but we can all acknowledge that all-star appearance was not done out of validity, but more done out of the backing of the BTS. And that is 2022 Andrew Wiggins. I just want to, you can hate on me all you want. I don't care. Shout out Kansas. You love it. All right. Andrew Wiggins in the finals, 16 points, 7.5 rebounds, 2 assists, a block, a steal, 46, 33, 65 from the line. In the finals, I apologize. What I just said was the playoffs. In the finals, he elevated it. 18 points a game, 9 rebounds, 2 assists, 1.5 steals, 1.5 blocks. In game 5, he put up 26, 13, 2, 1, and 1. Shout out Andrew Wiggins.
Don't worry, Ethan. I'm going to edit that last part out. Okay, go ahead.
That's great.
give us your three guys, and then I'm going to just note who I think is the most glaring void in this whole thing. But yeah, go ahead, Ethan.
All right. So obviously, we had different strategies for this. I was looking less accounting stats and really just like guys who I'd want to have on a roster. One that stuck out for me that I very vaguely remember, and I think it was way too early in his career for him to be thrust into a spotlight like this, much like the rest of the team that he was on. But I wanted to give some flowers to 2012 Serge Ibaka. You looked at a guy who was obviously the fifth banana, maybe even the sixth banana, depending on what side of the bed Kendrick Perkins woke up on in 2012. But
Are you referring to 2011 Serge Ibaka?
When he was in the NBA Finals, it was the 2011-2012 season. So,
gotcha. Okay, yeah, fair enough. Right. I looked at him too. Fair enough.
Yeah, so I looked at a guy who I don't think he was ready for the moment, but just from a defensive standpoint, obviously coming in and being able to kind of go toe-to-toe when try to match up with LeBron and Bosh, I thought about him and just thought he'd be a good guy to have in the squad. Averaged a couple blocks a game. Obviously does not get the shot attempts that he would get on any team that has Westbrook, Durant, and James Harden on it. But, you know, just a glue guy, wanted to bring him in. Other glue guys, I wanted to give Danny Green some flowers at some point. Danny mm-hmm. Green, who has made a career out of being a guy who can come off the bench, knock down a couple threes, be a strong defensive presence, and really lock down a team's best player, especially in his prime in the Spurs. I think he was one of those guys who I looked at for a long, hard time, and when I didn't have the scoring that I thought I was going to have when I lost that coin toss, he kind of fell to the wayside. So shout out to you, Mr. Danny Green. Another guy who I do want to give some flowers, and this is not any sort of attempt to me to suck up to Steve or anything like that, but 2021 Bobby Portis.
Fucking suck up.
Not trying to, you know, get down and pay heed to the man who gives me his password to record a podcast for his little network here. But I loved what Bobby Portis did in the finals. Cult hero, obviously, now in the city of Milwaukee. You take a look at how he kind of contributed off the bench for that squad, especially kind of spelling Brook Lopez, and just the energy that he brought to a team that didn't have a lot of playoff experience kind of going into that. I really think Bobby should have had a spot on somebody's list. But again, you know, that's just kind of where the draft shook out.
You want dogs on your team, as you stated, and you want a guy who's willing to break another man's jaw in order, you know, in the name of competition. So I respect that. I salute that.
Absolutely.
So the biggest name that I'm surprised didn't even get mentioned, we got to throw him out here, owner of 7 championship rings. We got to talk about Robert Horry, right?
I know you're doing. I mean, Robert Horry.
When you're looking at just like moments, like if you want to talk about like you drafted Ray Allen like pretty high, and mostly because of that one like main moment. Think of all the moments Robert Horry's been a part of, and plus the fact that it's happened 7 times for him, where he's just like, I mean, whoever picked Robert Horry clearly was going to win.
I see where you're coming from with that, and I'm not going to sit here and say I didn't spend about 20 minutes last night going through Robert Horry's NBA reference and Wikipedia, and no doubt the moments are there. I just don't feel like anything else really is, and I couldn't justify picking a guy who averaged less than like 8 points a game, shot under 40% from 2, shot under 40% from 3, and that's what he was supposed to do.
Sounds like Draymond.
You watch your mouth. Watch your mouth, okay? Because I have on my list 2017 Draymond Green.
And what do the numbers candidate. Look like that?
Yeah. Draymond Green that year in the finals, 11 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists, 1.5 steals, half a block. Go fuck yourself. How many nuts did he kick? I couldn't justify Robert Horry outside of just like the moments are there. I couldn't justify anything else.
I think he's definitely more of a body of work guy as opposed to like an actual like year that you can like point to and be like, damn, that was Robert Horry's year. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
obviously for sure. He had the moments. He was a part of a lot of teams. But again, for this exercise, I looked at him and I was just like, man, there's not one Robert Horry series in the finals that I can really look at and be like, man, he is worth having on my team.
Plus, agreed.
Yeah, that was my reasoning as well. We're doing the wine.
Mostly I just thought he should have been mentioned. But yeah, I think we should go ahead and start wrapping this one up. I'm gonna take all the drama out of it. I'm definitely taking Adler's team because Ethan's team is gonna hit the side of the backboard every fucking time. I respect the versatility. It's a fun team, and I love the route that you took. But I mean, Adler got Wiggins, bro. Hey, real quick before we go, I know we wanted to talk about a little bit of a finals preview, but Brett and Steve handled that pretty well. While we were recording, there's a little bit of breaking news though. I know probably saw this. Monty Williams signed on to be the Detroit Pistons' next coach.
Oh shit.
Six-year contract. $78.5 million.
Wait.
Hold on.
Did they just sign Monty Williams to a max contract? Is that what just happened?
Yeah, totally. Shams Charania is reporting that there's potential of the contract reaching incentives of $100 million. So it's getting pretty
spooky.
We already talked a little bit about the 2004 Pistons. Plus, it's been a super horny pod, so this is already the like Molly Hunter special here. But yeah, let's get a couple minutes on your guys' thoughts on the young core of the Pistons moving forward with just a proven leader like Monty Williams. And I'm gonna go hang myself because I've been hoping the Blazers would make a move just like this. Instead of maxing out Monty, we've got Chauncey Billups on a two-way. He's gonna be coaching the G League team this year. It's fucking bullshit. But yeah, you guys take it away and then let's have us a good night.
Yeah, I mean, is he a proven leader? That's my only thing with that. I see the justification behind the hire, especially with that roster full of young guys. You want to establish culture. You want to establish structure. You want to establish, an identity. But wasn't one of the big things is he lost that with Phoenix? He lost the room with DeAndre Ayton. There was someone else. He lost the room with Jay Crowder. So who's to say that he's going to come into Detroit? They're going to develop some of their guys as stars. Look at Cade, definitely James Wiseman. And if he limits one of them or tries to, I see you, Ethan. I'm just saying, I love the hire. I don't think there was a better choice out there. I think it's great, and Detroit should have made the move. I'm just playing devil's advocate. If we're going to say this whole thing is based off leadership, the whole reason he fizzled out in Phoenix was because he could not hold some interpersonal connections with some of his guys. And there's something there. That's all I'm just going to leave it at that.
I think the big thing when you look at the Phoenix situation compared to the Detroit situation, I think you look at a situation of players who want to be coached versus players that don't. And I honestly think that DeAndre Ayton is one of those guys that I think you could put him on any team. And obviously knowing nothing of the personal situations going on with him, I don't think he's kind of a guy that would take direction well, regardless. Monty Williams is going to come in and he's going to challenge those guys to play hard. And we looked at how that team performed when Dwayne Casey was the coach. And now when Dwayne Casey was the coach of the Timberwolves, he came in and during a developmental time in our tenure as well. And I think he's done a good job doing what he did for the Wolves, for the Raptors, and then ultimately for the Pistons. But when you look at the roster and you look at the makeup and you look at the window for when this team wants to compete, they don't need a developmental guy anymore. They need a culture guy, and they need a guy who's going to push them to succeed and push them to the heights that they think they can aspire to. Obviously, you mentioned Wiseman as the second guy on the Pistons team.
Some would say number one.
Oh, okay. So yeah, most available, maybe a little bit more than Cade has been over the past couple of years. But obviously you look at whoever they're going to take in this draft, whoever's available left at number five, whether it's one of the Thompson twins, whether it's my guy Dick in Detroit, that'd be fantastic. But obviously you're looking at Jalen Duren, you're looking at Beef Stew, you're looking at Jaden Ivey. This is a team that's going to have a mindset and a team that has a lot of guys in the similar timeline. And that's when you start to build the culture. That's when you start to bring in guys who can start to make a difference. I think Monty Williams is going to be that guy. bit of an overpay, maybe, but if you need to convince him to not take a year off, which is what apparently what his plan was going to do going forward out of the season, yet you got to back at the Brink truck. And shout out to Tom Gores, the Pistons owner, a man who could spend 3 hours getting ready and still look disheveled as shit. Good on you, man. Back up that Brink truck. Go get your guy, Monty Williams. And I'm excited to see what the Pistons can do moving up, especially after the draft, once we start to see what their full roster is going to look like for sure.
Absolutely.
One thing that you just said that I think really goes well with the theme of the pod is you dropped the term dick in Detroit in a sentence. And I think we might have a new title for the pod going forward. But yeah, on that note, this has been a ton of fun, guys. We're going to get this up for people to listen to Thursday before the game. But also, I kind of feel like it's an evergreen pod, so people can have it with them going into the weekend. I'm going to promote it as such. And
thank you guys for joining. We're not going to get into any sort of preview or anything like that, but can we just do quick predictions? Can we just go around the horn real quick?
Let's all do our pick. Let's start with you, Ethan.
Okay.
Real quick.
I'm going to go Denver in five. I think that there's going to be a little bit of sluggishness during game one, obviously with Denver taking a lot of time off, the Heat being a little bit more fresh. Obviously, their plane tickets were booked and they were ready to go. But if there's one thing that Denver has showed me throughout these playoffs, it's their ability to adjust and their ability to turn it on at the right moments, whether it's looking at the Wolves roster, the Suns series, working through the Lakers. And we're already starting to see, oh, they've beat an 8 seed and a 7 seed and a 4 seed, and now they get to play another 8 seed. Fuck your asterisk, Denver in five.
I'm not going to go that in depth. You can go fuck your asterisk, though. But I'm going to go, I'm just going to follow my heart here. And I'm going to go Heat in seven.
Ooh, I love it.
Okay.
It's funny, you guys both kind of picked against your rosters, yeah, with your realistic pick. So I don't know if you guys are making a good supportive case for either of you. I'm going to go, I think the Heat got a little bit of fight in them. I think they're being a little overlooked considering how well they've played so far. But even in that, I'm going to go Denver in six. And I don't feel great about it. I could see there being a Denver in seven scenario. All right, buddy. Let's wrap this one up and let's have a great fucking finals. Good talking to you guys.
All right. It's good talking to you
next week.
Peace.